afternoon, everybody. This is Robin Ayu from the Localization Fireside Chat, and welcome to another recording of our episodes. Today, we are recording episode 129, and I have the honor and distinct pleasure to have with me Sam Milenchik. And Sam is joining us from London, I believe, right? You're located in the UK, right, Sam?
Yes. Yeah.
And Sam and I talked before, didn't we? This is the second conversation, right? Yeah, we had a first introduction call about a couple weeks ago now, almost. Time flies when you're having fun. And we decided, hey, it was so good. Let's do a podcast on this one. Sam's area of expertise, will let him explain it to you in details, but it's very, very interesting when it comes to communication. How do we communicate high stake level communications, and how do we deliver those messages? Obviously, at that level, there's a lot of stress. So today I have a lot of two objectives. One is I want to get to know Sam. The audience wants to get to know Sam. And we'll tell the story of Sam Milenchik on this podcast this morning or this afternoon. And also we'll get to know what Sam's company called Pathos Labs is about and how are they providing these services to their customers and who are their customers, et cetera. And specifically and more importantly, what problem do they solve? Before I get started, if you are new to the channel, I appreciate if you can subscribe to the channel. That helps me quite a bit. Also, remember, the channel is the Localization Fireside Chat podcast. It's a personal effort by me only, and I don't have any supporting staff. I don't have marketing departments pushing this, just a personal effort. I do this on out of the goodness of my heart, driven by passion to communication and bringing people closer to each other. So any little help, commenting, liking, sharing the content would be great help for me as well. Sam, welcome to the conversation.
Thank you for having me.
Sam, we start the conversation generally on the podcast here by asking the question, tell us your story. Every individual has a story. So I'd love to get to know your story and tell the audience, how did you get here?
The story for me centers around one word, which is sort of like the mantra that I live by, and that is autonomy. The most important thing for me is that I have autonomy, that I recognize my agency, that the people that I work with understand the power they have to shape their own lives. And that really is what drives me. It's driven me from, you know, a youth as a young age all the way up until today.
And so the story of, you know, the company that we talked about originally in the first conversation we've had is your company, Pathos Labs. And it seems to be involved in supporting founders, executives, high stake communication, helping them speak with clarity, convictions, and in specific moments, in specific those times, we've all been there, where you're presenting a very high stake or you're involved in a conversation that involves a lot, you know, either a large deal that you're working on or a case of some sort that you're working on, that every word you say has, not like this podcast, we can say anything we want on this podcast, every word you say is counted toward whatever you're trying to, the goal that you're trying to achieve, either the cause or against it. So the question is, how did you come up with the idea?
So I was a combat medic about 16 years ago and was really introduced to what I now see to be an ability that grew out of my childhood. I was introduced to an ability that I have to be very calm under pressure. And it was almost like a detachment from what everybody else was thinking was going on in that moment, right? And that ability sort of, I carried it with me as I, you know, graduated from the army. I left the army, I became a rabbi, a teacher, and eventually, you know, left that profession to become a coach for founders. And the real key I felt was that there's the message, there's what it is that you're saying, but then there's also how you're saying it and how you're coming across to the people who are hearing you, how they feel about what it is that you're saying. And again, if we come back to this idea of autonomy, right? For me, I want every single person in the world to live their life that nobody else could live. We're all here mathematically drawing unique breaths in the history of the universe. It'll never happen again. And everybody has their experiences and their own recipe that went into making them, which means that everybody has a unique contribution to give to the world. And oftentimes, that contribution is hidden behind poor communication. It's stunted by their inability to be confident about what they're saying, to believe outwardly in what they're saying, to think that what they're saying has value, and to communicate it clearly and compellingly. And so that's just, it was a no-brainer. I can keep calm under pressure. I can teach other people to stay calm under pressure. And I'm very passionate about getting people the tools to communicate clearly. So we created a company around it.
Sorry, you know, like we always talk about, you know, how each individual is driven toward their destiny. And sometimes we try so hard to find that destiny. But meanwhile, you don't have to try hard, right? So, I mean, you just articulated it. It sort of finds you because all the experiences that you have in your life sort of gravitate you toward what you eventually becomes your destiny. And, you know, for those people, like I've seen a lot of people go and do a presentation, like either at a sales event or a, you know, at a public speaking event, and they really like they're sweating in their hands and, you know, they're shivering in some cases. You know, I was included, like when I was a young professional, first time I remember doing presentation like 30, 40 years ago, you know, I had to really think of what I'm doing and how I'm going to do it. But I guess, you know, practice make perfect. I don't know if that's a thing in your world, but you know, the more I practice, the more I wasn't afraid of making mistakes. And I still do make mistakes quite a bit, actually, but I will never give up. I'm always going to try to communicate regardless of my style. Grammatical errors, you know, choosing the wrong words. Okay, correct me. That's fine. Feel free to correct me. I'm okay with that. But where people, I guess, you know, are afraid of things, and especially like for somebody like you, Sam, combat medic. I mean, just think of that. I mean, for people who don't know what that is, Google it. Try to figure that out a little bit. When you're combat medic, you're trying to support somebody. Somebody's injured. Somebody's having a problem. Under fire, you know, under fire, I mean, under, in a war zone, in a conflict area, and you actually have to focus on what you do, because if you don't, you're going to lose a life, and you don't want to do that. So if that is nothing, I don't want to use the, you know, I don't want to quote Seinfeld on this thing here, you know, public speaking is number one. That's what people are afraid of. You know, public speaking is number one. Second is death. You know, there you go, right? So all I'm saying is, it's not that bad. It can be done. It can be learned. And, you know, Sam built a business on it. So what is your ideal profile of somebody who wants to go to you for support, for help?
Yeah. So, I mean, look, like you just said, everybody has this issue to some level or another, especially if they aren't exposed to it regularly. Even if it's somebody like a PM, you know, a project manager or an equity manager at an investment bank, they're going to need to be making these presentations on a regular basis to people who have more authority, more power over them, over their career trajectory, let's say. So really anybody who has this issue, I'm happy to work with them. The people that we've found the most success with have been either executives or founders who are looking to raise money. Those are the two sort of main ICPs that we're interested in working with at the moment. But like I said, everybody has this issue, and we're happy to work with you know, anybody who wants to work with us.
So you know, I'm not sure if you've ever been asked this question, right? So I ask this question quite a bit. But if you were to introduce Pathos Labs like in an elevator, you're going up the elevator, you've got three floors to get this done. What's your, not 60 floor, like I live in Toronto, like some of these buildings are really high. And, you know, to do an elevator pitch in a large, in a long building in Toronto, it will take you an hour. Let's focus on three-story high building kind of thing. So how do you do that? Give me your elevator pitch.
The elevator pitch would be, I help people use less deodorant.
Wow, I love that. It didn't even take one level. That's pretty good, Chad.
And that sort of, you know, it works on a number of levels. It works because it's funny. It's out of the box. People look at me like, you know, that's not what we expected to hear.
Yeah.
So it actually invokes a lot of curiosity and lowers people's barriers. I don't take myself too seriously. Neither do you. You know, we can have a chat here. And then obviously you go into this idea of helping people when they're in these high stakes situations to stay calm, to stay clear, to say what they need to say in a compelling way, and not have their body and their nervous system betray them.
You know, this is bringing, like, you know, I can see the use case for this thing, right? So I've met a lot of people that they could use. Like I was just talking to an individual this morning. I just met him, and I you know, we took a picture together, and I just put it on LinkedIn. Uchenna Okiki. I just met him from a company called the CFO, and they help companies get ready for investment. So if you want to go borrow money or you want to expand your business, you're looking for investors, you want to go to the banks or whatever, you need to do a lot of homework before we get there. Maybe part of the homework is, you know, you need to be able to articulate what you're looking for. And I love that idea, because if you're going to go in front of somebody to ask for investment money, you got to get your story correct. Because people like who are willing to invest money in your first, you know, first postcard, if you will, I don't know, picture of your business is you. I mean, as a business owner, right?
Well, especially at early stages, I think what a lot of founders don't understand or haven't fully internalized is that the idea of your business is table stakes. So the problem that you're solving or the unique methodology that you have of solving it, that will get you in the door, will get you a seat at the table, will get you a meeting. Investors are not, and this is irrespective of what an investor will tell you, okay? Investors are not backing just your idea. They want to know that you are the person to, or you or the team are the people to execute it. And if you come in there and you can't hold yourself steady, what you're telling them is, when things go pear-shaped, when things get difficult, I'm not going to be the one to stay steady. And they're giving you millions of dollars. They're not going to want to trust you with millions of dollars if you're going to freak out every time something goes wrong.
Right. Sure. They need somebody to hold steady in the face of the storm. Plus, they need somebody that can assure them they're going to get a return on investment. Not the single crisis that's going to come along, that individual is going to bail ship.
Exactly. I mean, I would say, number one skill for founders is resilience.
Yep.
You've got to be able to weather the storm, to stay steady under pressure, not to lose yourself, to lose sight of your vision. And that starts with your nervous system. It starts with how you present yourself to a board of people who theoretically have more power over you. How do you stay grounded? How do you stay leveled? All those skills translate across the board also to running a company.
Yep. Hey, listen, on your website, I was just going to review a few things on your website before our call there. You mentioned that you're not a consultant or strategist, and you are a sort of modern day rabbi for business leaders. So what does actually look like in practice, this thing?
What does that mean? So it's funny. I would get on calls with founders, and they would inevitably, when we're talking about nervous system, it affects the deepest parts of our upbringing, of the way that we relate to other people, power dynamics, the way that we view ourselves, self-esteem. These are deep and difficult issues. And so you're going to get on a phone call with a consultant and you're going to start talking to him about your marriage or your upbringing. That feels a little bit weird. It's not business as usual, right? But to really make a change with somebody's inner world, you have to be able to hold space for the divorce and the difficult upbringing and, you know, whatever else is going on inside of that human being. And so that's where the rabbi part comes in, because, you know, part of my training, obviously it's Jewish law and it's rigorous and all that stuff, but part of it is sitting with people who are, you know, whose daughters don't talk to them anymore, sitting with people whose spouses have cheated on them, sitting with people who have really gone through the worst that life has to offer. You know, I remember my first day on the job as a rabbi, somebody died. And within a week, I was at somebody else's bedside reading them their last rites as a young person, okay? And to be confronted that viscerally with death, it really changes the way that you look at life. So the rabbi to business leaders is this idea that, look, this relationship is more than just, let me come in and tweak a few words on a slide, okay? Let me come in and teach you a few breath tricks. That's not what this is. This is a relationship of depth. And it will change you. Our meeting will change you.
Yeah, that's right. And you know, it's all about human relationship, isn't it, Sam? You know, like the people that you are in contact with in whatever situation is, right? So either in a grieving situation, like you just mentioned, Sam, and not just the family of the people who are impacted, but even you, who are supposed to be in a position of responsibility to calm people down. Now you're faced with an extreme scenario where you feel probably you need somebody to lean on, because everybody, it doesn't matter where they are, they probably can use somebody they can lean on and talk to, right? And I just, you know, funny, like you and I had sort of similar thoughts here, because for the past 30 years, in a way that I grew my business, my reputation in the business, it was centered around that. Talking to people as if I don't need anything from anybody, to be honest with you. The only reason I'm enjoying this conversation is because I'm enjoying this conversation. That's it. And over the years, that's how I built my entire business. Is there a truth to that in your mind?
This is something that I tell people, no matter who it is that I work with, and this is the thing that shocked me, sort of working very closely with people, right? No matter who a person is and no matter what level of success they've achieved in their job. You know, I coached, for example, one of the global execs at Invesco. This is one of the highest power people in that company, right? And they are beset by imposter syndrome, by self-esteem issues. And it all comes because we refuse to look past the mask. We're not connecting with the people in the room, you know? And if you can learn that, look, it doesn't matter what somebody's title is. We're all human beings. We all have hopes and dreams. We all have things that we're nervous about. And if you can connect to that human, everything else falls away.
You know what? You bring a very good memory for me, because I remember I took on a new job, and that was like decades ago. And I remember, like, you know, first day on the job, I was the, high level job in sales. So I was just being asked, you know, to go through the product list and understand these products, et cetera, and understand the company directives and, you know, the messaging and all that stuff. So when I go in front of a customer, I am repeating, basically reiterating what I've been told to do, right? What I've been told to say. It's funny, because I walk into this high level executive at a company and I'm introducing myself and I'm telling him like the exact marketing pitch that I remembered in my mind about this particular company. He stopped me. He said, "Stop. I don't want marketing BS. I want your story. Before I start talking to anything, I want your story. I don't need this marketing BS. I need you to tell me your story as an individual. Like, forget the company, forget the product, forget who you represent. I deal with people." That's how he framed it in my mind. And in his mind, and he put that on to me. Because at the end of the day, look, there's a lot of PowerPoint decks. Everybody builds those, a dime a dozen. But at the end of the day is human are human at the end of the day. Like, I just can't believe it. How many people, they come to me, giving me their sales pitch, and it feels I could have gotten that sales pitch from a robot. Literally, I can get it from an AI bot. And it wouldn't, you know, now I hear like AI bot can replace some salespeople. They do. And they act like it.
Absolutely. I mean, the thing, I will never teach the people that I work with to rehearse word for word. Because if I was going to sum up successful public speaking in one sentence, it would be connect to your audience. And the more you have to hit a script and say certain words and be a certain way, the less you're connecting. Because it's not about them anymore, it's about you.
Yeah, correct. You're absolutely correct, because you got to flip it around. And you got to figure out what level can I connect with that person on. I just can't believe it. Like, there are some CEOs, and I don't want to name any names. I know a few of them. They will exactly, you know, give hell to a specific person in their company, because in their mind they want to push product number A, and they attended like a sale, a co-hosted sales call with a customer and their CEO on the phone, and that poor guy, the salesperson, whoever that is, forgot or did not see it as an opportunity or did not see it as a possibility, because the conversation is flowing, to mention that product. Basically, let's say we're talking about something way on the left side of the product list, and the CEO has it in his mind, we need to mention this product way on the extreme side. The situation doesn't dictate that. But some CEOs, they force their people to say, continuously repeating the crap that they want them to repeat, even though it doesn't fit the situation.
And the funny thing is that, you know, if people would stop for a second and say, does this work on me? The answer to that question would obviously be no, right? I don't like being sold to in this fashion. So why would somebody else all of a sudden, yes, of course, please tell me 100 times about your product. You know, it's one of the things that I teach people is nobody cares about you. They care about themselves. They're trapped in their own world with their own foibles, you know, and they're thinking about how do I look and how do I sound and how are my hands? And so you need to try to talk to them on their level about the things that they care about. And they'll be much more willing and able to listen to you.
There's something I also noticed, which, you know, I've experienced a million times, but I've noticed it on your website too, is Sam, is the gap between what people mean and what people actually hear. And you talk a lot about that on your website. There's a disconnect between what you're saying and what the other guys are understanding. And that happens in everyday lives. It happens with me and my wife sometimes. If you're married, you know what I mean. And if other people, like, there are in a situation where they, you know, even in a legal form, that happens all the time. Sales form, it happens all the time. In a medical form, also happens all the time. And that's why we need, you know, I keep talking, we need medical interpreters that they're certified to do medical interpretation, because a lot of times, you know, it's lost in the messaging, really. So the big thing is, for anybody can adapt their messaging, but how do you know what the other guy's looking for to hear in your words? So I'm coming into a meeting, I'm coming into a situation, maybe I met that individual a couple of times, but I don't really intimately know what exactly they're looking for in my words. So, let's recognize there is a gap and happens all the time, but how do we narrow the gap and how do we adjust to messaging? I guess that would be for you.
Yeah. So there's a number of ways. The first thing I would say is it depends on the level of research you want to do beforehand. Everybody will have a favored way of communicating, a favored way, certain vocabulary that they use or metaphors. And if they have any level of public presence, that will be online. You know, read their LinkedIn post, read a blog post that they wrote, look at a podcast interview that they did, and you'll see their style of communication. So that's one thing. You also could look at their background, see where they came from, what kind of things they're interested in. The other thing I would say, though, is you have to go into every single conversation without a covert agenda, right? The more that you go into a conversation trying to get something from the other person, the more focused you'll be on yourself. If I'm able to come into a conversation and say, you know what, I'm not trying to take anything from you, I'm trying to get anything from you, I'm trying to connect, that's it. You'll be able to listen to that person on a much more granular level, get much higher fidelity signals, and be able to understand what matters to them. Mm. Right? So just from our conversation now, what have I heard? I've heard that you value, you've mentioned your wife. You know, people might not mention their wife. So I know that you value your marriage and you want people to know that you're married. That's important. You've mentioned experiences you've had in your career. So I know that your career is important to you. The experiences you've had are important to you. You worked in sales. So I'm listening. I'm trying to understand who is Robin, what matters to him. And then if I have something to give you or sell you, I can first of all talk about it on your terms, but I can be much more open with it. I can say, look, this is why I think this is a good fit for you in your context, in your situation.
And you know what?
I'll just say one more thing. So like the best pitches, by the way, do this exact thing. So let's say I'm going to pitch an investment firm. What I'll do beforehand is I will look at everything that investment firm has ever published. What is their investment thesis? What are they interested in investing in? What kind of things don't they invest in? And the more I can build up a picture of who these people are, the more I can talk to them on their level. And they say, look, hey, we're like this other company. We have similar ideas, whatever it is. We can tailor the messaging to that specific person.
You know, you bring a very good point, the listening part. And I've talked about the listening part, I don't know how many episodes on this podcast, because a lot of people don't, it's not they don't listen. They listen, but they ignore it. Why? Because most people, they walk into these situations that they're not calm into these situations. They're not walking into these situations in a calmly manner. And, you know, you started the conversation by saying you've learned how to be calm under pressure. You've learned how to become more of a, I'm going to make sure that the situation is calm here because I got a job to do and I got to do it well, regardless of what's going on around me. And I noticed a lot of times, it doesn't matter what position you're in, sales, CEO, investment officers, whatever they are, they have a goal in their mind, which set upon them by that performance review that somebody has given them a goal for the quarter, the month, or the year, and they have to achieve it. And every conversation they enter into, that goal is in their mind. I get that. I mean, we all have goals. Nobody wakes up in the morning with no goals. Everybody has goals. However, you can't get the goals to dictate your conversation. You can't walk into a conversation with somebody, and I gave that example a million times. Say, okay, my boss gave, you know, I need to give two POs this month, and I'm on only one, and I need another one. So this conversation is do or die for me. And then it becomes a struggle internally by the salesperson. It blocks everything. Yeah, I don't want to listen anymore. I just want to, you know, go 100 miles an hour selling you my stuff to get that PO from you, because if I don't, I'm out.
Yeah.
Which becomes an urgency, doesn't it?
It paradoxically makes it much harder to get what you want.
Of course.
Nobody likes that desperation, that straight selling, that
100%
please buy from me. Yeah.
Nobody. And 100%, like, I agree with you. Nobody wants to buy from a desperate person. Like, when was the last time I don't buy cars often, but one time I had to buy a car, and, you know, this guy came in relaxed and fine, explained to me, and I walked out with a car. But how many cars did I looked at, and how many other salespeople I've talked to, and they were so aggressive, you know, sign now, sign here, sign now. I'm not doing it.
Yeah. Well, because I think what people don't realize is that there are lots of signals we are giving off that are not the words we speak, right? So, for example, in that situation, right, a signal that the car salesman is giving off is, if I am so desperate to sell this thing, it must not be very good. I must not be selling very many of them. Well, what signal is that does that tell me as the buyer? And this must not be a very good product. I'm going to be very wary now. So there's signals, you know, we're walking around in a cloud of them all the time, to how we dress, to how we sound, to the words that we use and the body language. It's all there, and it's all being...
If you want to pay attention, there's some. If we want to pay attention.
Well, but this is the interesting thing, is that some parts of our signaling are impossible for our bodies and our psychologies not to pay attention to. So if I'm in a room with somebody who's desperate to sell me something, my antenna will pick that up automatically. And everybody will.
You know what I don't understand, to be honest with you, and I like your take on this one? You know, most companies hire like smart CEOs, smart executive people. And what I don't understand, like, how are these smart people are failing to deliver the right message to land in the right way to the audience that they're going to, even internally, even as simple as doing a town hall meeting. Like, I don't get it. Well, what's the obstacle? What's stopping them? They have the smarts. They have the knowledge. Is it just training exercises? What is it?
Well, I mean, look, if knowledge was the key to all of our problems, anybody with access to the internet would be a billionaire. So it's obviously not knowledge, right? There's something in having somebody looking at what you're doing, giving you honest feedback, not, you know, fawning, sycophantic, oh, you're the best in the world, we're so happy to have you. No, this is what you got to work on. This is where you're not doing well. This is where you're being a bit rude. That kind of, you know, many of these people will probably only ever have been surrounded by yes men or women. And therefore, they're not getting the honest feedback of, hey, this is not working for us.
Yeah, you know that like button that it's on social media? I think they should add another one to it, dislike button too.
Well, they used to have one on YouTube, by the way, and they took it away.
Yeah, because now all you see is like to your point, all you see is like people are fawning over things, but you're not seeing, and if you do see like some constructive feedback, you see it in nasty comments back to you or to the creator or to the content generator. And it's not necessarily a constructive feedback. It's just more like, pointing the fingers and, you know, not necessarily you're going to do anything with that one. Now, tell me, like, when you, you do this day in, day out, what are the most, you know, in your head, as you interviewed, as you've talked to your founders, et cetera, what is the most common communication failures that you see? Like, there must be some trend, is there?
Yeah, the biggest problem is not thinking about what other people need to hear. It's being trapped in our own minds, in our own ways of communicating, in our own pet ideas that we just have to share with other people, whether or not they need to hear them or want to hear them, or it's relevant to them. that is probably the biggest issue that people that I come into contact with have in terms of their communication. Now, there's lots of other issues which interfere with communication, but raw communication skills, that's probably the biggest one.
So would there be consequences for that? Like, in your mind, did you see like any one of those situations where somebody delivered a message and it went sour, and there were some, without naming any names, I don't want any names, but.
Well, you tell me, have you ever been on a pitch with a founder who had a deck, put the deck on the screen and talked for 20 minutes?
Oh, 100%. I could tell you one in particular. I got to tell this story. This one you just reminded me of. I was doing a presentation for a large tech customer in California, and I managed to get all the VPs in the room because I've known the SVP in the company. I won't name any names. That company doesn't exist, by the way, anymore. And my boss said, you know, at the time, the VP that I was working with, I said, hey, I'm going to California. I got to do this presentation. I was on the other side of the country in New Brunswick, in Canada. But most people in cold New Brunswick would like to go to California. So he said, I want to go with you. I said, okay. And 2 weeks worked on a deck, etc. I don't know. I mean, for me, I'm just going in to have a conversation with these guys. He ended up showing up with a 120 slide deck, and I'll never forget that. And every time, and he started the presentation, and we had like an hour and a half with these guys. And every 15 minutes, my contact will ask him, we'll ask him, so can I get to the bottom of this? Like, what are you? And the answer was from the presenter at the time, which is my boss, hang on, the message is still coming. The answer to your question is coming. 60, 70 minutes later, the guy just stopped him and said, Hey, Robin, it looked at me, not him. He said, what's this about? I gave him the answer like in 5 seconds. That was the answer. He said, okay, you continue on with your presentation. I got my answer.
I mean, yeah, that's the thing. People come in and they have this message. I'm going to share this message. I'm going to share the slide deck. Come hell or high water.
Is that because we crave the podium? People like to hear themselves talk?
Like, I don't think that that's the case. I think that people don't understand how to have a conversation anymore. They don't understand how to connect with people. All they know how to do, and I don't want to blame people or make them seem bad. We're not taught this. We're not taught that good communication is listening to what the other person needs to hear and meeting them where they are. You know, we're taught selling is telling about my product, what do I do, why it's so great. Well, but you might not even need it, right? You might be somebody who doesn't need to communicate, and therefore it's completely irrelevant to you that I'm doing what I'm doing. But if I get out there and give you my pitch, I wasted half an hour of your life. So I don't know that it's malice. I think it's just they don't know.
They don't know, right?
No one's ever told
them. Crazy. It's crazy. I mean, to some people, communication is an easy thing, I guess, like everything else, right? And to some other people, like I know, it becomes difficult for them. Like it is truly difficult. Because I really do, and it happens in every profession, not just necessarily being a communicator, which now it's required by everybody. It's funny because a lot of people say, well, I'm a programmer. I don't need to talk to people. Eventually, you have to talk to people. Or I'm an algorithm writer or whatever. I'm a translator, whatever. I don't talk to people. Well, hang on a second now. That world is gone. And eventually, you have to talk to people. So that part of I don't need to talk to people, so therefore I chose a profession where I don't have to talk to people, that's gone. Everybody now needs to talk to somebody. And, you know, hiding behind texting and WhatsApp and all the other messaging apps, sometimes, guess what? You have to listen to somebody's voice on the other side and engage with it.
The thing about messaging and even this type of contact that we're having now, I call that 2D communication, right? Because
Well, absolutely, it is.
Yeah, it's two dimensional. Right? You don't smell the person and look at them in the eyes and shake their hand and feel them. There's no touch involved. We're very tactile creatures, right? We've grown up that way in a very small tribe where we could get close to people, and you know, you can meet somebody and give them a clap on the back and say, hey, it's great to meet you, and you really form a rapport very quickly. Whereas over Zoom or worse, text message, LinkedIn, DMs, you're just pixels on a screen. So it becomes increasingly difficult to communicate the more layers of signal you take away.
You know, I was just talking to somebody, actually, I just met last week from Ireland. He does nonverbal communication. cues, like body language, facial expressions, what has not been said. And there is a science behind all this, apparently. I've heard about it, but I'm not intimately familiar with it, as to how do you decode, you know, this nonverbal cues. And that's part of the listening, by the way. Listening and observing, right? So, I mean, I'm sure you're going to correct me on this one. So you listen to the words, what people are saying, but you also need to look at, you know, how they're reacting to what you're saying in terms of, you know, you walk into a meeting, you start doing a presentation. And I've been there, trust me, I've got scenarios for every one of them. I've been there doing a presentation and everybody at the boardroom is nodding. I mean, nodding meaning they're sleeping, literally sleeping. I caught two people sleeping and it's too long of a presentation, man. It's like you need to move on now. So, there are those situations where you need to look for body language. Correct me if I'm wrong on that one.
Yeah. So body language is interesting because as a field, it's very, there's a lot of fine tuning. There's a lot of details and the fine details that you need to pay attention to. I tend not to teach body language to the people that I coach for a number of reasons, mostly because there are two ways to get really good at, I mean, I don't think that having interpreting body language as a skill is something that my founders need. They don't need to look at the body language on a fine grained detail of the people that they're sitting across from, right? We know more or less what the major body language signals look like. We know when somebody's not paying attention or they're nervous, that kind of thing we get. What's more relevant for my founders is the body language they're giving off to other people. Now, I could train them in that, but what I'm wary of is the more I give them to think about while they're talking, the less they're connecting. The more they're thinking about, am I touching my neck? Am I crossing my hands? Are my palms open or not? Am I displaying my vitals? Am I not displaying? And then they're not thinking about, how do I connect with Robin? So my approach is much more, look, let's fix the body language by fixing what causes the body language. The nervousness, the nervous system, which is out of whack, adrenaline and norepinephrine that are flooding your system. Let's deal with the underlying issues of why it is that you're nervous and you're protecting yourself and you're rocking back and forth, or whatever it is, right? Or you're shifting your eyes. Then everything else will take care of itself.
Absolutely. So for you, like for Pathos Labs, for instance, can you walk us through a typical engagement and how do you start, for instance, what does progress look like? Over a few months, over a few weeks, I don't know how you measure that, over a few years, not sure. How do people get engaged with you on a particular assignment?
So we like to work together one-to-one with people. My ideal engagement length is at least 6 months because this kind of stuff takes time and it takes iteration and practice. We have a very thorough onboarding process where we actually measure heart rate variability as proxies for dealing with stress.
How do you measure that?
Well, so you get a polar heart strap. It goes in your chest. You download an app called Elite HRV, which basically shows you live heart rate variability and heart rate. And then what I'll do is put people through a battery of tests on a call. And I can see it live, how their heart rate's fluctuating, you know, how they dealt with stress throughout that 45-minute period.
So it's a measurable exercise. Like, it's not like a hypothetical thing.
No. I'm very against airy-fairy type of stuff, even though a lot of what I do is, you know, you would call woo-woo or mindset work or whatever, but it needs to be measurable. It needs to be something that's scientifically backed. It's not... So, I mean, that's it. And we track that metric throughout the engagement to make sure that it's trending in the right direction. And,
you know... Do you monitor also the dilation in the pupils?
Dilation in pupils, we don't, only because remotely it's very difficult to...
Correct, measure. Yeah.
But I do measure, for example, words per minute, tonality, rhythm. You know, is somebody raising their pitch because they're getting nervous? Are they talking much faster?
And that's how you measure success, basically, right? You measure it before and after?
So that's one metric, okay? That's a group of metrics. The other metric is, are you getting done what you need to get done? Are you getting funded? Are you getting your board to back your...
Oh, did you achieve the goals, basically?
Exactly. Are you getting what it is that you need to get, right? And so that takes more time. But for example, I had 2 days ago a woman that I work with at the Church of England. She texted me. She said, oh, I got that promotion that we've been talking about, and, you know, coaching her through different ways to talk to her boss and present herself. And so that's the other section of, you know, concrete goals. Can I achieve this?
And so, do you do this like one-on-one with your people? Like, is how do you do it online? Do you do it face-to-face?
So it's one-on-one. It's online. We are launching in Q1 of next year. Basically, there have been lots of people who've wanted to work with us, but the price point is just not right for them at the moment. So we're launching a much lower level thing, which is like, I don't know, like £1,000 a year, I think, or something like that. But it's a community. So it's, you know, you get two calls a week, and you have your peers. And so it's like 90% of what we do one-on-one, but for like a 6% of the price or something like that. And the idea there is that you can profitably do work like this in a group. The issue is when you're in a group, you don't get the results as quickly or as tailored. And when I work with somebody, the way I phrase it is this: I'll bring my expertise, you bring your problems, and we'll solve it together. And that's the kind of service people appreciate, I think.
I was going to ask you about that whole community thing. You must have like some sort of a community to bring them together in exchange of information, that kind of thing. Actually, I'm seeing a lot of that now. People in various industries, various initiatives are building communities, and those communities become like each other's ambassadors almost to solve problems, issues, learn from each other. Is that what you're aiming for?
Well, the biggest thing for me about the community, apart from the education and the coaching and whatever, is the fact that, you know, you can have founders in there who see other founders struggling with the same thing, or you can have executives in there seeing other executives struggle with the same thing. And all of a sudden they're like, oh, it's not just me. Because the thing that I've heard the most from people across all the people that I've spoken to is, I don't belong here. I don't belong here. I got here. You know, a guy's a VP in a major startup, and he's saying to me, I don't belong here. I got here by accident. Okay, maybe, but probably not.
He doesn't want to be there, or he, why would he say?
He's saying, you know, he's like, I don't know. I lucked into this job and I lucked into that job. And he's
saying, oh, I see what you mean.
He just says, I don't belong here. And everybody at every level feels that way. So the more you can bring these people together and show them that everybody feels this way and it's normal and you do belong and we're working on it together and you have ambassadors and you have help.
I guess the, you know, the obvious question for this one is, in your perspective, in your opinion, is leadership trained or inherited, or is it inside of your DNA? Can you train somebody to be a leader, or do I have to be born with it?
Well, look, I think that at the extremes, you probably can't. Meaning that there are some people who just are, I don't know if they're uncoachable is the right word, but they're just not going to get there, right? They're not, meaning it'll be too much of a lift for them to get from where they are to where they need to be. Most people who are not on the tail ends, of course it's coachable. No, there's nobody who's born a natural leader. You pick it up from your environment, from your parents, from the friends that you're exposed to, from secure attachment in your home life. And later on, if you haven't had those things, you learn them.
Yeah. And that's what I, you know, I was just going to say with, you know, when people say, oh, I don't know why I'm here, kind of a comment to you. I'm thinking like maybe leadership, either it's not in them, or they don't refuse to be trained on it, or they're not feeling comfortable with it, or they're in a situation where they just drifted into it. I know, like, I've had these conversations in sales. I asked some of the salespeople, like, how did you get into it? And sometimes, like, I'll be interviewing people in sales, say, you know, my boss thought, I'm an outgoing person. Listen to this keyword. I'm an outgoing person. And they happen to be an engineer or something. And he thought, I'll be good in sales.
Yeah.
So they drift into a job that they probably didn't think about it.
Yeah. It really is. It's about understanding that anybody can achieve anything with the right amount of willpower and the right amount of effort. Nothing is beyond. It just depends on what you want for yourself.
Yeah, like, you know, there's things in life can be done with purpose, I feel. Career specifically, and or could be a result of a luck somehow. I mean, it's, you know, like the old adage that says, you know, effort plus luck equals success. But you need to have something on the go here. It cannot be all luck. All luck sometimes just, it gets to a point where people ran out of luck, I guess, and the true self it shows. And that's what you're teaching them to avoid, right? To learn a new skill, to be better at what they're communicating, etc. So what are the, in your opinion, like from the patterns that you've seen through the leaderships and the founders that you talked about, you talked to, what are the most crucial conversation that they want you to address? I mean, you mentioned investment, but are they, you know, job, for instance, promotions, et cetera? Is there anything else?
I think people want to understand how to get people behind their ideas. They want to know how to be persuasive, whether that's in a board meeting or it's getting colleagues to back down on a particular initiative. That's a big one. They also want to understand how to get people that are underneath them in the hierarchy to do what they say, right?
And this is yeah, like, yeah.
How do I just get them to do what I say? Well, okay, maybe that approach is not the right one, okay? But they want to understand how to get results from their speech. I think people are very used to talking and not being listened to, not being understood, where their instructions aren't followed, and they're desperate for their voice to make a difference.
True. Now, we're just coming near the end here. I just want to leave the listeners with a couple of key takeaways. Those listeners that they are not in a position to reach out to you, or for some reason have not yet reached out to you, or maybe they use the takeaways to reach out to you. So there's three different options for people here. So what are the two or three simple practices that they can do, an audience listening to this podcast can do, to start their week next week or now, I guess, to improve how they communicate under pressure? Maybe like two or three takeaways, if you can give them that.
Okay. Number one is to download an app called State Shift. Okay. It's a breathwork app. And I would say create a breathwork practice. If there was any button or anything close to a button you could press in your body to calm down, it would be your breath. So I would say the first takeaway is take breathwork seriously. I would say number two is to drop your agendas. Communicating openly and honestly with the people that you're talking to is an unlock that I think most people haven't explored and is tremendous, right? Just come in openly and honestly, talk about, you know, what you want to talk about, connect, be curious of the other person. And the third thing I would say in order to be an effective communicator is understand why you're talking. So one of the things that I ask my executives before we get into an engagement is, why are you speaking? What is your aim? Are you there to inspire, enlighten, encourage action, persuade? What are you trying to do? Once you have that goal very clear in your mind, you need to censor yourself. Anything that you're going to say that falls outside the purview of that goal, it doesn't serve that purpose in an immediate way, don't say it. And I think those three things are probably a good place to start.
That's right. So, those are very good points, especially the Shift app. I really like that. And I know a few people like I'm thinking about right now, they can use that app. So I'm just going to recommend that app for them to download. So they're going through some tough time right now. I'm thinking about them. So, I want to thank you. Anything else you'd like to add, Sam, before we wrap it up?
I just really appreciate the time you took to talk to me, and it's been a great conversation. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you, Sam, for joining me on this recording of this particular episode, 129. And I really appreciate it. I appreciate the insights. I appreciate your conversation and the expertise you shared with us. Hopefully the audience took a few things out of this conversation. I know they do. At least they tell me they do. So we'll see how that improves their lives. And if you guys have been, you know, impressed or curious about this particular conversation with Sam, please feel free to reach out to him. He's connected with me on LinkedIn. For those who are looking to connect with Sam, you can reach him out directly on LinkedIn, or you can reach out to me and I will introduce you to Sam. Happy to do that. If you have any thoughts about future episodes, I would hope that you would share with me, and we'll build the next episodes to meet your needs or to address your topics. In the meantime, if you don't mind liking, sharing, commenting this podcast, I really appreciate it. From Sam Milenchik and me, Robin here, I would want to wish you a great end of your day. We are Thursday here, and we're coming up to the end of the day. I know it's late for you, Sam, in London. So wish you a great end of your day and the rest of your week, and I will see you at the next episode. Appreciate it.